Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us Pat Smith. And Pat, of course, works on the subject of Lyme disease. Now, Lyme disease, well, it's a relatively new disease. When I went through medical school, nobody had ever heard of it. When I went to Africa to practice in Africa, nobody had ever heard of it. When I came back, nobody had heard of it. Probably the late 1970s or early 1980s, we heard about this bizarre type of arthritis that was occurring in a place called Lyme, Connecticut. It was transmitted by deer ticks, and it seemed to be spreading in the New England area. And well into the intervening years, the last 25 years, it's all over the entire country. And the trouble is that there are probably a million, maybe even 2 million people who have this chronic disabling disease. And because of the government refusal to recognize what really needs to be done and putting out what I believe, and I think what Pat will agree, are very, very faulty guidelines for making the diagnosis. An awful lot of people go from doctor to doctor to doctor, and they can't get help. Pat, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me this evening.
What motivated you to really want to put in the time and the effort that you do trying to get the truth out about this little known and little understood disease?
Well, I guess what motivated me to start with is I saw it in my school district, some of the early cases here in New Jersey, and they were very devastating. And then, unfortunately, two of my own daughters developed the disease. One became very seriously ill, and she was out of school for over 4 years, and she was in temporal lobe seizures for 3 years. And so I saw the devastation it can produce, and I basically said, something has to be done, and nothing was being done, which I think was the most astounding thing to me. I didn't see any focus on it. I didn't see any effort to try to stop its spread or to stop the debilitation that patients were experiencing.
And I think this, of course, is what's so frustrating to the patients, because they go to the doctors, and the doctor, you know, you come in, you got all these bizarre sorts of symptoms, and there's nothing specific, and the doctor does the standard lab test, and he may even run a Lyme test on you, and it comes back negative. And then he's told by the government, why, that's all you have to do. You've done what you're supposed to, and the test is negative, you don't have the disease. And is that really true, Pat?
No, absolutely not. We know now that the tests that are generally used, which is the ELISA test, and if that is positive, they follow it with a Western blot. Unfortunately, the tests are not very sensitive, and so many, many people are testing negative when, in fact, they really have Lyme disease. And unfortunately, this creates a bad situation because they don't get diagnosed, and therefore they're not getting treatment, and they go on to develop chronic disease.
And, of course, once you get chronic Lyme disease, why, you know, your whole life has changed. You're not, in many cases, you can't think clearly. You feel terrible. And it can affect your almost every system in the body because it's produced by a spirochete. And, of course, well, we're going to let Patrick tell you a lot more about this in just a moment as we begin to develop this incredible story. But this is poorly understood by most doctors, nor a reflection on them, but well, the medical profession seems to be largely ignoring this very real and disabling disease. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Our guest this afternoon is Pat Smith, who works with Lyme disease. He works, now, what's the name of the association you're with, Pat?
Yeah, I'm president of the Lyme Disease Association, which is a national nonprofit, and we have affiliates and chapters from coast to coast, actually.
And, of course, I suppose most of the members are people either who have Lyme disease or who've had family members who've been incapacitated by the disease.
That is correct. Those are the people that are working to try to get answers.
How many people do you think that really have this very real disease in America today? Do we have any idea?
Well, the numbers can be quite staggering if you look at the fact that, first of all, the reported numbers usually average somewhere between 22 and 24,000 a year nationally, which doesn't sound like a lot. But the Centers for Disease Control itself has said that those numbers represent about one-tenth of the cases that meet its criteria. So we're probably seeing somewhere around close to a quarter of a million people each year developing new cases of Lyme disease.
And, of course, the problem is so many of these patients are well to develop chronic Lyme disease, and they go on and on and on and become simply a statistic because the average doctor is not going to recognize this. What sort of symptoms do people have when they get this disease and go into the chronic stages?
Well, generally speaking, what happens is if it gets into the central nervous system, that's usually when you have a problem, and then you're dealing a lot more with neurologic disease, even more so than arthritic, though people also do have arthritic manifestations. So you may have problems with your muscles, you know, pain or twitching or seizure disorders, headaches, tingling, numbness, dizziness, poor balance. Then you also have cognitive problems where you have difficulty in thinking and concentration, forgetfulness, very, very poor short-term memory, disorientation. I know of professional people who have gone into work in the morning and have gone out to go home, and they don't remember what car they drove to work, where they get in their car and they have no idea how to drive home. And it's quite scary when you hear these kinds of stories.
And, of course, the trouble is that the number of people with this disease is increasing and increasing, and Lyme disease just wasn't around before, what was the late 70s, somewhere in there, 1970s?
Yeah, it was probably about the mid-70s when the first case was, actually came about.
Hold that thought for just a moment here when we... Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Pat Smith, and we're talking about Lyme disease. And she's the president of an organization, a national organization, that tries to address the problem of Lyme disease. And as she was saying, the first cases, this was not been seen before, but the first cases appeared about the mid-1970s and then gradually spread from a place called Lyme, Connecticut, gradually out all across America. Would you like to tell our listeners how it is spread, what the cause of it is, how it presents initially, and then, of course, what so often happens when it is not diagnosed adequately?
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit first about how do you get it. You get it from the bite of a tick, which generally is the deer tick, and it can be Ixodes scapularis in the east or Ixodes pacificus in the west. However, there is another disease that the CDC calls star eye, southern tick-associated rash illness, which is almost exactly the same as Lyme disease. That is carried by the lone star tick. So we know that those are the ticks primarily that we're dealing with when we're dealing with Lyme disease or Lyme-like illness like star eye. And basically what happens is the tick is usually born uninfected, and it bites a small mammal of some type, a white-footed mouse or a wood rat or something like that, and it picks up the disease. And then in each stage of its life, it bites another animal. So that can mean three feedings. Along the way, if you happen to be one of its meals, then you're going to develop the disease from that if that tick is infected. And that's generally how you get it, although it also can be passed across the placenta. Unfortunately, if a person does have Lyme disease and it's active, the symptoms are active, they definitely should see a physician about that because it can cause birth defects or death of the fetus.
And, of course, this is actually caused by a spirochete, which is a type of bacteria, the same type that actually produces syphilis, isn't it?
Yes, it's very, very similar to syphilis, and that's why it's now been called the great imitator, just as I believe syphilis was in its heyday. And it can produce, certainly, as you mentioned earlier, diseases of it can appear to produce many other diseases that actually mimics their symptoms, such as MS and ALS and chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, even Alzheimer's and autism. You know, there have been some cases of diagnosed as those diseases, and they've turned out to be Lyme disease. So it's a very sneaky little bacteria, and you have to be very careful if you do get it, and, you know, to do the proper thing. And I certainly can would like to address what you should do when you get it.
All right.
If you get bitten by a tick, first of all, and you develop any kinds of symptoms at all, you should immediately go to the physician, who probably might tell you that you need to get tested, well, or you need to wait until other symptoms appear, or et cetera, et cetera. Unfortunately, we know, again, that the disease can sometimes you know, manifest without a positive test or without the bullseye rash. So some physicians will treat prophylactically. So if you're lucky, you may get a physician who will treat you without having a positive test or without having very definitive symptoms. But, you know, it's my opinion that if you get bitten and you live in an endemic area, which applies to many areas across the country, you should certainly, you know, talk to your doctor about that possibility. Then you should be watchful for a bullseye rash, which may or may not occur. It occurs in less than 50% of the cases, or a rash somewhere else on your body. Also look out for flu-like illness, you know, generalized fatigue and malaise and headaches. Things like that may signal that the disease is present. Unfortunately, one of the tricky things also about the bacteria is that it can get in you and it can stay in there and not produce any symptoms, sometimes for weeks or even months later. So you may get bitten and you may say, well, I didn't get any symptoms, I don't have to do anything about it. And maybe 6 months later you start to develop symptoms, and you don't recollect the tick bite, or you don't associate the two, and neither does your doctor. So it's very important to keep a record of it. If it does happen and you find that you don't have symptoms, you certainly should keep a record of where you were bitten and if anything did show up, et cetera, the date, and if you were in a Lyme endemic area.
All right, fine. And, of course, now initially, of course, it was only seen on the eastern part of the United States. It was very rarely seen on the West Coast, but now it really is endemic all throughout California and almost all over the United States, isn't it, in one form or another?
Yes, that's correct. Originally, when I started about 18 years ago, in California, it was only the northern portion of California, around the Ukiah area, that area, where there were Lyme disease cases reported. Now we know, both through case numbers and also by some studies, that it extends all the way down to Southern California. And as you pointed out, it is in, right now it's been reported in every state but Montana, and up until this point. And by the way, it also is the most prevalent vector-borne bacterial disease in the world, which a lot of people don't realize. So it has definitely spread, and it has definitely become a worldwide problem that other countries are trying to deal with, and actually are facing some of the same problems, by the way, as we are here.
And one of the biggest problems is it just isn't recognized, because you have to know how to recognize this. And, of course, we've had Dr. Stricker on as a guest on one of our programs. He is a doctor who treats this disease. He lives up in the Bay Area. He's not taking any patients. He is so busy. that he just can't take any patients. And you have to go to doctors who are really trained in this, and there are groups of doctors, and certainly you have your directories there that they're available on the internet. Maybe you could even tell people how they could get in touch with the directories where they could find a doctor who really is trained to treat this.
Yes, it is very difficult, and of course I do work with Dr. Stricker on the Lyme disease issue, and he, like others, unfortunately just have too many patients, and so it's become a real problem. We call the physicians who deal with Lyme, with chronic Lyme disease, LLMDs, for Lyme literate MDs, and we do maintain a nationwide list of those physicians, and they can either call our toll-free information line, which is 888-366-6611, 888-366-6611, or they can go to our website, which is www.LymeDiseaseAssociation.org, and on there you will find the directions for putting in your name, and someone will contact you and give you several Lyme literate physicians in your area, hopefully, though unfortunately in some areas of the country we don't even have Lyme literate physicians, and people from a lot of the Midwest especially, and in some places in the South, have to actually fly and take a day or two to see their physician in some other part of the country.
And the problem with this, really, is that the government doesn't seem to be very interested in this in this disease, are they?
Well, it certainly appears that way on the surface, and from one who has sort of probed into that, I kind of have that idea, and I guess I base it on the meetings that I have had in Washington, D.C., with some agencies, and if I may, I'll talk about the one that I had in 2003. Our association took a team of 14 individuals from across the country, and we were careful to get representation from various areas so that they would, to impress upon them, so they would understand this is not just something happening in the Northeast, that we, you know, our patients are from all over the country. And we also brought in some government officials from different states and some doctors and, a lab expert. And basically we presented to the, we thought we were presenting to Health and Human Services, that time Secretary Tommy Thompson's office, and it turned out that they actually video teleconferenced in most of the major officials from the Centers for Disease Control and the National Institutes of Health. And so we had basically a room full of people, either in reality or in video form, and we made a 2.5-hour presentation to them, and we explained how the CDC policies that they have adopted and procedures have prevented our patients from getting treatment, and I'll give you an example of that. The Centers for Disease Control, what they do is they actually provide a definition, in quotes, of Lyme disease. It's really a criteria for Lyme disease, but it's meant to be a surveillance criteria so that they can keep close tabs on how do the cases in California compare to the cases in Texas and to New York, and so on and so forth. So they have it as a very narrow definition. And that definition is you either have to have an EM rash, that's the bullseye rash, or you have to have positive blood work and some major system involvement. And if you don't meet that criteria, you don't get counted as a surveillance case. Well, there are problems with that. Again, less than 50% of people get a bullseye, as I mentioned, and as we've already talked about, the testing is highly inaccurate. So we're missing so many people. And doctors, unfortunately, and oftentimes unknowingly, are diagnosing using those criteria.
And we're going to be back in just a moment here. With Pat Smith, we're talking about Lyme disease. And this is really an ignored epidemic. We're talking about probably a couple of million people across America frantic to find help, and they're not getting it. We'll be right back.
the Anglo-American establishment gives you the documentation for Professor Quigley's allegation that there was a secret society created in England that ultimately came to dominate England and ultimately came to dominate the United States of America. The Anglo-American establishment will give you the books that you can read, written by men who were actually involved in the original secret society. Professor Quigley opens his book saying that most people have heard of the Rhodes Scholarships, and most people, a few people, have actually heard that Cecil Rhodes wrote a confession of faith, which was attached to his first five wills, talking about the formation of a secret society. But what almost no one in America realizes today is that that secret society was actually formed and still exists to this very day. The Anglo-American Establishment by Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, is one of the most important books you'll ever read, and available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In the 1970s, there was a group of Italian immigrants in the small town of Rosetto, Pennsylvania, who drew worldwide attention for their unusual cardiovascular health, despite their pasta diets. I recently uncovered the fact that their unusual health was attributed to the precious red wine which they imported from Italy. Today we know this as the French paradox, the fact that the French exhibit greater cardiovascular health despite their fatty diet because of the red wine they drink. Wouldn't it be great to enjoy the health benefits of red wine without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives? Well, now you can with Longevinex, the world's first stabilized red wine molecules preserved in an airtight capsule just like in a sealed bottle of red wine, equivalent to 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex for healthy aging without the calories and alcohol. 866-405-4000. This
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Tieri. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done, get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today, 800-544-8927, 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle...
Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, our guest this afternoon is Pat Smith, and we're talking about Lyme disease, and Pat is telling us about this meeting she went to with a number of experts back in Washington, D.C. They have video conferences with experts from the CDC, from all across the country, and so tell us a little bit more. What actually happened at that meeting, Pat?
Okay, well, so we presented to the Centers for Disease Control and the NIH and HHS this information about patients and how they weren't getting diagnosed because doctors were using this criteria. And we also presented to them how insurance companies weren't reimbursing when patients did get diagnosed. They wouldn't reimburse based upon those criteria. So that was some of the issues that we presented. And also we presented issues about research. And the fact that despite everything happening with this disease, and with people's lives, that there was really very little research monies, especially coming out of the Centers for Disease Control, to do anything about the disease. And one of the examples I mentioned was the blood supply, basically because we know that the Red Cross the last couple of years has changed its blood donor guidelines. So now if you have chronic disease, you can no longer give blood. And we also know that the organism has, been shown in studies to be able to survive under blood banking conditions. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily that it's transmittable through the blood supply, but it's certainly something that you would think there would be some significant research taking place on. So we mentioned these and many other issues, and at the end of the meeting, the Deputy Secretary of Health asked for comments from the government agencies. And basically, the comments that we were met with were dead silence. Not a word was said. Nothing, no acknowledgement or, anything. It was quite eerie, actually, that you could listen to that type of presentation for that length of time and not have, something to say, but there was nothing to be said.
Well, I really think that we have real problems with the CDC and the NIH and the U.S. Public Health Service. I know because I, of course, engaged them during the AIDS epidemic. I went back to the CDIC. I spent time there, and their successful policy has resulted in 500,000 people dying of AIDS, another almost million infected. That is either the greatest public health failure, or, well, maybe there's another agenda out there. And trouble is that they're not addressing Lyme disease. They're not addressing chronic fatigue at all. And anybody who tries to really do research or get help seems to just like, almost like running into a brick wall. Did you ever have that feeling?
Oh, absolutely. Most of the time.
And of course,
dealing with Lyme disease, I have that feeling. And it's frustrating, and it's more than frustrating. And, we have a wonderful country. We have a lot of financial resources. We also have a lot of, I'm going to say brains out there, the ability to deal with these illnesses. And yet, for some reason, they seem to want to overlook them. And maybe like if we get up tomorrow, they'll be gone. It's quite dangerous because now, compared to when I came on board 18 years ago, I believe the spread of Lyme has been rampant across this country.
It's increasing dramatically, isn't it, Pat?
Yes, I'm here.
The spread is increasing dramatically, isn't it? In other words, aren't there a lot more cases coming down with this disease than there were, say, 10 years ago?
Yes, definitely a lot more people. And additionally, the tick populations are spreading in places where they never saw them before. I travel around the country, and the last year or two, I've actually been going into what I would consider more remote areas of the country where maybe there's a small town or city, and it's surrounded by a lot of rural area, etc. And we never heard about these areas before having that much Lyme disease. And now when I go, 300, 400 people will show up on a Saturday afternoon, in the dead of winter, in fog and rain. It's just totally amazing to me. And the other thing that amazes me is why are they're coming to me for answers. And, again, this is something that the Public Health Service should be supplying. They should be supplying answers, or if they don't have them, they should be supplying the resources to the appropriate people to get those answers. And you know what really makes it even more amazing is in 1999, I was invited down to U.S. Army CHIPM, which is down in Maryland, and they were doing work on the ticks there, and they wanted us to come down to see what they were doing. And what we saw the Army doing was absolutely phenomenal, and to this day I don't understand the discrepancy. First of all, what we saw, and again, we're going back here, now.
Hold that thought. We want to get to that as soon as we get back here.
A very very important book is called AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working with an organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working with an organized medicine both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
Well, Miracle-Two soap isn't just soap, it's a miracle.
Sophisticated investors are buying gold and silver today because the dollar has lost almost 50% of its value in relationship to the euro, and the price of gold and silver has increased almost 40%. If you're interested in learning more about precious metal investing, why don't you call Bo at 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177, or visit him at Elliott's Stamp and Coin Shop in downtown Santa Cruz at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building, which is located between Trader Joe's and the Signature Twin Movie Theater. Bo's telephone number is 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177. And he's located at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building. And if you mention you heard about Elliott Stamp and Coin Shop on Radio Liberty, why, you'll get a 15% discount on some non-investment items.
Leading edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high-quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Pat Smith, and Pat was just about to tell us about going down to this military facility, and she's watching what they're doing with the ticks. Pick up the story there, please, Pat.
Okay, thank you. Well, first, before I do that, let me say that what I had found out was that the military had actually been mapping all the major installations across the country since the 80s. For tick populations, and then they would say whether the base was a high risk, a low risk, or no risk for Lyme disease. So that was pretty interesting when I found that out. So when we went down there, what we saw is, besides the fact that they were testing, of course, the ticks for different organisms, they had developed a prototype of a tiny lab. It was a handheld lab. It was probably about maybe 6 inches high and 4 inches wide, and what that was going to be for was the military could take that with them when they went out on maneuvers, and if a soldier got bitten by a tick, they could take that lab right in the field, and they could test the tick to see if it was positive for Borrelia burgdorferi, which is the spirochete that causes Lyme disease, and if it indeed were positive, they could then treat the soldier on the spot for Lyme disease. Well, this was pretty fascinating, considering the problems with testing and so on that, you know, we've discussed, that they were able to do this and that they already had a prototype developed. Then they told us about the next thing they were doing, which was not quite in the prototype stage, though they'd done some work on it already. What they were doing, I alluded to that mapping early on, they were now taking and they were not only just mapping the installations, but they were determining what the infectivity rate, that is how many ticks, let's say, out of 100 on that base were infected with Lyme, the Lyme bacteria. And so all this information is being programmed into the satellites that circle the Earth, a GPS system, and they were developing a helmet to be worn by a soldier in the field, and this helmet would have a heads-up display. So the soldier would go out in the field, and he or she could look up at the heads-up display in the helmet. They could look to the left or to the right, and they could actually see where the heaviest tick populations were and maybe the infectivity rates of those ticks. So they would be able to maneuver the troops around those tick populations. Well, I have to tell you, I thought I was in a Star Wars movie, and my first response was, well, this is absolutely wonderful technology, but why don't we share that out in what I call civilian land so that the rest of the population can benefit from this? And, of course, they were very sympathetic to that, and I've since discussed it with some congressmen that, when these kinds of things come into common usage, they should now be brought out so that we can use them, especially in areas, let's say, like parks or areas where people have to go that have high-risk jobs and things like that, so that they could readily be tested and treated if necessary, and or avoid tick populations depending upon which of the devices that you would use. But I found that to be almost irreconcilable with the research on the other side about trying to prevent the disease and stop the disease out here, from occurring and stop the devastation in disease already produced.
Well, it would appear that they want to protect the military, but of course the CDC and the NIH and the other government agencies really aren't interested in protecting the American people. I mean, I don't know what other conclusion you could come to. I know personally when I went to the CDC and talked to the number one man there who was in charge of the AIDS epidemic, and I said, why don't you use standard public health techniques to try to stop this epidemic? And he looked me in the eye and he said, Stan, I know what needs to be done, but I'm blocked at every turn. He did the honorable thing. His name was Jim Curran, Dr. Jim Curran. He quit the CDC and he went to Emory University and charged the public health service there. But unfortunately, there always seem to be forces within government blocking what needs to be done to protect the people. And as I said, 500,000 people are already dead. Another million are infected and will die. The end result of a failed public health policy or successful public health policy, you'll have to decide in that listening audience. And the same thing is so true with Lyme disease. It's almost like days off all over again as I talk to you, and I sense the frustration that you feel. I felt that same frustration as I led the battle for many, many years, trying to save human lives. And, of course, do people actually die of Lyme disease?
Yes, they certainly do, even though they will tell you, the CDC will say on their site, it's rare, whatever that means. But we certainly, unfortunately, know of a number of people who have died of Lyme disease, because after all, Lyme affects every system in your body.
Now, doesn't it actually affect the heart? Can't it attack the heart?
Absolutely, and it can attack every organ. And I think they have found Lyme disease in it at one time or another. And yes, and heart happens to be one of the things that I believe is maybe one of the main causes. The problem is, oftentimes, and I'm sure you saw this with AIDS and other diseases, is that that is not listed as the cause of death on the death certificate. So though we do have some death certificates with Lyme listed, usually it's listed as something else, and they don't even take Lyme into consideration. They want Lyme to be something benign, and unfortunately it is not benign. It may take a long time, for it to shut the body down, but it certainly effectively does that if it's not appropriately treated.
And, of course, the appropriate treatment is really by antibiotics. And have you noticed that there's a real campaign now put out by the government and by certain medical organizations to discourage the use of antibiotics? Oh, these terrible doctors, they're using all these antibiotics, and you know, they shouldn't be using antibiotics. If we just didn't use antibiotics, everything would be fine. And yet, of course, the treatment for this disease is long-term antibiotics. Isn't that a fair statement?
Absolutely. That is the main treatment of the disease. They either use intravenous antibiotics, intramuscular injections, or oral preparations, or maybe combinations thereof. And really, it's the only line of defense that most Lyme patients have. And so to try to take that away, which, of course, is exactly what is happening, they are trying to take it away and trying to discourage doctors from prescribing it, you know, you have patients getting sicker and sicker. And actually, in the long run, the human suffering is astronomical. And, of course, if they think they're saving money, they really aren't, because, you know, these patients are taking many, many other kinds of medications and things, and oftentimes end up in a nursing home, and, you know, or they lose their job, or the children can't go to school. So it's actually, if it's about money, and I don't know what it's about, but if it's about money, they certainly, in my opinion, aren't, you know, it isn't a correct way to go, either, well, it certainly isn't correct morally, but it's not a correct way. Even you can't base it on that, because that isn't the answer. That if patients got early diagnosis and got appropriate treatment, most of them probably would be able to function. They would probably be able to go on and work and be productive members of society. We've seen that happen time after time. It's usually the ones that can't get diagnosed readily or can't get the antibiotics after a while that go downhill.
And of course, I think for the listener out there who really doesn't understand, to make the diagnosis after the doctor's decided this is a possibility, he would ordinarily do something called an ELISA, which is an antibiotic test. Most of those, or at least half of those, would be negative, even when the patient is infected. And so what they really should do is do a Western blot. And yet, of course, what the CDC says, well, if the ELISA test, the antibiotic test, is negative, why, you certainly wouldn't do anything else. But, of course, the Western blot is the real key to this, because here you're actually measuring the proteins, and isn't this really the gold standard for making the diagnosis rather than the ELISA, which is what the government says all you should use?
Yes, well, first of all, let me state, too, that the CDC policy on the testing, again, is meant to fit the surveillance criteria. They clearly state on their website that, you know, Lyme is a clinical diagnosis based on symptoms, history, excluding other illnesses, presence in an endemic area, and so on and so forth, and testing is meant to be used as an adjunct. But on that note, they also say, yes, that the ELISA should be used first, and if positive, should be followed by a Western blot. And the problems, as you point out, are the ELISA oftentimes aren't positive. And so what happens is they don't go to a Western blot. On a Western blot, even though the CDC specifies some, you know, certain bands and band numbers, etc., most physicians know, after dealing with Lyme, they know certain bands that appear, and they have patients, and if they have particular bands, they know that that is supportive of their diagnosis of Lyme disease. So right now, the Western blot is probably the most definitive test that we have, you know, for the disease. Unfortunately, if you follow the CDC's protocol, you're not going to get one.
All right, fine. So if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, Pat will be with us a few more minutes. Our telephone number out across America is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. This is a growing problem, and of course the treatment is antibiotics. And we're not talking about, you know, taking it for 2 weeks or 4 weeks. Some of these patients are on treatment for a year before they really begin to get the benefit. Isn't that true, Pat?
That's absolutely true. A year or even longer, depending on the individual. Or they may have to take it in repeated courses. They may take several months, and then they become symptom-free. And maybe then they'll be symptom-free for months or years. And then they may have to go back on again, because the disease has the ability to hide inside the cells. And so, and also it changes forms. It can develop into forms that sometimes don't have a cell wall, and so it's not easy for conventional antibiotics to go after those. So it goes into those forms and it hides in the body. And when you're under stress, another disease, you know, perhaps that you have, or a cold, just a common cold, or maybe a divorce or something like that, this stress can then bring the disease back again, and then people need to get retreatment.
But, of course, even if you have health insurance, many times the health insurance companies will refuse to actually pay for treatment because it doesn't fit CDC specifications. So they've created a catch-22 situation, haven't they?
They absolutely have. In fact, I just had a big meeting in an eastern state 3 weeks ago in the state capitol, where we met with a dozen insurers and also state officials to talk just about that issue. And, of course, they claim that they don't deny people based on that, but we actually have written records from patients where it states from their insurance companies that they've been denied because they don't meet the CDC criteria.
And yet the CDC admits that their criteria shouldn't be used. So what they have is this catch-22 situation and a growing number of people who can't get treatment for a very real disease, a disease that can affect them, their nervous system, and can give them symptoms similar to MS, or to anterior lateral sclerosis, Lou Gehrig's disease, or dementia, or seizures, and attack their heart and their joints. And this is a terrible disease. And yet, of course, so poorly understood, you know, there's a small group of doctors who've really dedicated themselves to actually treating these patients. How many people are there across the country who are Lyme-literate physicians?
Oh, I would say I'd estimate maybe 100, 125.
And a lot of these just aren't taking any patients, isn't that the case?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
A lot of these really don't take patients because they already have, they're overwhelmed with patients.
That's correct.
And so this is a real healthcare crisis. And have you had any more contact with the CDC since this first meeting that you described with Tommy Thompson?
Actually, they sent us a reply in writing to our questions that we had presented there. And basically, the bottom line was, though, they didn't change their stance at all. They still said, well, we have never said that doctors should diagnose based upon the surveillance criteria. However, they refused to put that out there to the physicians.
Now, so it's all right for you to know, but not for them. Well, let's go. We've got Bill calling. Hi, Bill. How are you doing?
Yes, I'm fine. I have a question for Pat, is her name?
Pat, yes. Where are you calling from?
Frankfort, Illinois.
Frankfort, Illinois. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, years ago, I'm 70-something right now, and years ago, I guess I was a boy at that time. I visit northeastern Minnesota all the time, and I had the bullseye, but I never experienced any illness from it. Now, am I immune, or...
Well, how long ago was this now that this...
Oh, happened? I'd say 30, 40, 50 years ago.
It wasn't around at that time. It must have been... Wouldn't that be...
No, I got the bullseye. I know,
but the disease really wasn't known at that time. So it may have been... other diseases can produce the bullseye.
Oh.
And not just this one alone. Would that be a fair statement, Pat, if he got this disease 40 years ago, or at least the bullseye?
Well, we have heard of some patients who have actually... gotten a bullseye prior to the 70s, and now the thinking is that perhaps the disease was here, but it was not maybe as virulent and not as many cases.
Wow.
And so I suppose it is feasible. And as far as you know, whether you're immune from it or not,
right.
Generally Lyme does not confer immunity. That is usually what is said. So if you indeed did have it, you know, you were fortunate to not have any other symptoms from it.
Yeah.
But again, it's not known at this point in time that it confers immunity.
Just be careful of those deer ticks, Bill.
Yeah. Well, you always get ticks up there.
All right. Well, Chris, this is the carrier of this, and unfortunately, it's just spread all across the country from Lyme, Connecticut.
Right.
Okay. Anything
Thank
else,
you.
Bill?
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And our guest this evening is Pat Smith. Pat, let's get your telephone number. Let's get your website out so people know how to get in touch with you and give that out again.
Okay. Our website is www.LymeDiseaseAssociation.org. And our toll-free information line is 888-366-6611.
All right, that's 888-366-6611. That's the LymeDiseaseAssociation.org. And, of course, there will be links to the other sites where, of course, you can get a list of doctors who really are specialized in this field. And, of course, they are the Lyme-literate physicians. It's something really we should have a lot more information on, and you're going to have to get educated, ladies and gentlemen, on this subject, and perhaps you can help your doctor to get in touch with the doctors who really are working with this, because from what Pat has said, we're not going to get much help from the CDC. Anyway, Pat.
Right. That is absolutely true. And you know, one other thing, if I may, about the CDC, just information in general. We now know that many tick-borne diseases are carried by the same tick. So if you get bitten, you may get one or more diseases at the same time. Unfortunately, they're not really promulgating that information very readily either.
Thanks very much. We're out of time. Bye-bye, and God bless you.
Thank you.
We have a brand-new video today on the Oklahoma City bombing. It's called Oklahoma, What Really Happened. And, of course, it consists of a lot of never-before-seen
video
footage. Now, it was seen in Oklahoma City immediately following the bombing of the Murrah Building, but blacked out across America. And in this footage, you're going to see the commentators talking about the other bombs that were in the building at the time of the initial bombing. We're told, of course, that Timothy McVeigh acted independently. We're told many things by the media, but wherein does the truth lie? Oklahoma City, what really happened, it will give you the opportunity to see long-suppressed video footage of what really transpired. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for Oklahoma City, what really happened.
Have you ever wondered whether you're really getting the truth from the media? Have you ever thought that maybe somebody's controlling your reality? Well, there's going to be a meeting. It's going to be held at the Westin Hotel over by Great America. It's going to be on May 28th and 29th, and it's going to be at the Conspiracy Conference. Now, if you'd like to know more about the Conspiracy Conference, call 209-832-0999. That's 209-832-0999. This is the fifth exciting year they've had this. Dick Gregory is going to be there, Nick Begich. There's going to be Daniel Hopsicker, Jack McLam. I'm going to have a booth, although I'll not be speaking. You're going to see really the contrast between good and evil. The Conspiracy Conference is a great educational opportunity. We hope that many of you will give serious consideration to going May 28th, 29th. That's 209-832-0999. That's 209-832-0999.
Are you concerned about your child's future? Well, it starts with a sound education. VHM provides for that cornerstone of your child's future with a quality education founded on biblical principles. Our school sets high academic goals while developing moral standards. From preschool through eighth grade, your child is taught by experienced and credentialed teachers in all subjects, including our dynamic music program and state-of-the-art computer classes. Proverbs 22:6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." For over 50 years, VHM Christian School has provided peace of mind to parents knowing their children are receiving an excellent education in a loving environment. VHM is located at 427 Capitola Road Extension in Santa Cruz. Won't you call us today at 475-4762? That's VHM Christian School at 475-4762.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, we were talking at the last hour to our other audience about some of the books we have. One of them is called Lab 257. It's the story of a laboratory on a place called Plum Island, just across the inlet from a place called Lyme, Connecticut, where this terrible disease developed. And of course, many people believe this was genetically created as part of a biological warfare agent that got out of hand, and other people think it was created as a biological warfare agent and is doing exactly what it was intended to do. You see, they're protecting the army, but they're certainly not protecting the civilians. And any efforts to really do anything through the CDC and the NIH and these other organizations are very effectively blocked. And you have to ask yourself, why? Well, we carry one book on chronic fatigue syndrome. It's written by Hillary Johnson. It's the story of chronic fatigue, and we still have a few copies of that. Well worthwhile getting, well worthwhile, of course, reading and studying, because it's exactly the same story as Lyme disease. Every effort is made to block finding out what can be done to prevent the spread of that horrible disease. And there are probably another 1 million to 2 million people with chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia out in America. And then, of course, we have about probably a couple of million people with Lyme disease. And one of the keys to this would be the book Lab 257. We carry the book, a fascinating book. You really need to understand they're up against evil people. We carry the book The Virus and the Vaccine. It's the story of the cancer-producing virus that was actually in the original Sabin and the Salk poliovirus. And when they knew that it was in the, pardon me, it was in the vaccine, they knew it was in the vaccine, and they continued disseminating it here throughout America and throughout the world. Why would you do something like that if you knew there was a cancer-producing virus in the vaccine? Well, you need to get the book. It will raise a lot of questions. And then, of course, we carry the book Vaccine A. It's the story of the experimental vaccine that was given to our troops during the first Gulf War, and almost half of them now are ill, and many of them have died. And then, of course, we have the book The Fluoride Deception that goes into what water fluoridation is really all about and the cover-up of the terrible, terrible danger to the health of our children and the impact it has on the minds of our children and the bodies of our children. And they're simply poisoning the American people because the major product is not fluorine. It's, well, half of the hydrofluorosilicic acid is fluoride. The other is lead and arsenic and cadmium and polonium-20. Why would they put that into your drinking water? Well, that's a good question. Maybe the same reason they're really not that interested in stopping the Lyme disease or chronic fatigue or the AIDS epidemic. Well, you really need to get my book, AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, because it was written at a time when there was a hope of stopping the spread of the disease. Right now, we're not trying to stop it here in the United States or anywhere in the world. We're simply passing out condoms and telling people to go ahead and do whatever you want to, knowing full well condoms don't stop the spread of herpes. They don't stop the spread of human papillomavirus. They don't stop the spread of chlamydia, and in many instances, they don't stop the spread of HIV. We're actually encouraging people to be promiscuous. Why would we do something like that unintentionally? Sort of like the war on drugs. The more we fight the war on drugs, the more war there is, the more drugs there are being used, the more we have a war on cancer, the more cancer there is. Could that just be happening by accident? Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our website is radioliberty.com. The books, The Virus and the Vaccine, Lab 257, The Fluoride Deception, Vaccine A, and my book, AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, because we're on the front lines of this truly spiritual battle for the survival of Western civilization. And so until tomorrow at the same time, we'll be back with you once again. Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.